Hello, Health Investor. Welcome to another episode of the Health Investment Podcast. Today, you're going to hear from Ryan Foy. Ryan is a four-time author, professional speaker, and wellness educator who's passionate about all things wellness and personal growth. His third book, titled How to Thrive in Remote Working Environments, aims to support the well-being of remote workers globally. It recently hit number one on Amazon in Canada and cracked the top 40 books on entrepreneurship in North America. In the episode, Ryan shares how to thrive as a remote or hybrid worker amidst unique challenges like moving less, working right near your kitchen, not being able to turn off at the end of the day, and more. If you're liking this podcast, I'd be so grateful if you'd write a review and share it with a friend. Enjoy the episode. Simonson, certified nutrition coach and your host of the Health Investment Podcast. If you're ready to look and feel your best without any confusion, frustration, or stress, you're in the right place. Each week, I interview experts and share no-nonsense, research-backed tips so that you can finally lose weight for good, eat healthy long-term, have the high energy you crave, and feel like a million bucks. I'm so happy you're here with me today. Don't forget to hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Hi, Ryan. Thank you so much for joining me all the way from Canada on the Health Investment Podcast.
Hey, Brooke. Thanks for having me and for everyone listening in. Welcome. This is going to be a fun conversation. So thanks for being here today.
I'm really excited about it. I've covered all sorts of topics. Any listener knows we've run the gamut here. We've talked some about sitting at your desk and how to align your spine or your neck or, you know, how to have proper posture, different things that could support you in a work environment. But we've never specifically talked about thriving in a remote work environment, which I think many of the listeners, if they're not remote 100% of the time, they're probably remote some of the time. I know a lot of people have moved after COVID from fully remote to some type of hybrid situation, but I'm really looking forward to you sharing your tips. Can you start off by telling us a bit about your background and what led you to get interested in helping people thrive in remote work environments?
Yeah, absolutely, Brooke. And this is a really interesting topic, even though, you know, we're well past the pandemic and there was that push and pull remote work and hybrid work. It's just great to keep this conversation at the top of mind. So kind of what led me into writing this book takes me back to when I was actually a teenager. So when I was a teenager, I was diagnosed with chronic migraines at the time. And long story short, I was part of this research study to better understand why I was getting these migraines. And what I ended up finding out through active journaling at that time was that, you know, the days I was physically active, I ate better, I slept better, and I was less likely, if at all, getting these migraines. And so at 12 and 13 years old, that was quite a foundational kind of shift for me to just understand at that age that, you know, when I move, when I am intentional about my physical activity, everything else just gets better. And so, you know, as we fast forward to where I am here today, you know, I've been really, really blessed to have a career in the wellness and education spaces and to now have books to support individual well-being. I have a few books out, but the one I know we're going to talk about here today is the one focused on remote and hybrid work. And you know, it's interesting because when the pandemic first hit in early 2020, I'm in Canada, like you mentioned, and we had a lot of there was a lot of fear, there was a lot of uncertainty, and there was just a lot of unknown, I think, globally in general. And I remember thinking, you know, I'm a pretty optimistic person, and I move every day, and I'm very intentional about what I need to do to be well. But I was struggling. And so I was like, you know, if I'm struggling, maybe other people are too. And so I did a little bit of market research at the time, and I found that there was really nothing out there at that point to support the individual remote worker who was just trying to get through this, but also take care of themselves and be well. And so I channeled my inner Mark Twain and went to my sister's place for 2 weeks and went into the woods and wrote this manuscript and then published the book a few weeks later. So yeah, it's kind of cool now seeing where it's gone, but also just that this topic has continued to be such an important topic for people as they continue to navigate the future of work and those hybrid and remote spaces.
It's interesting you brought up movement right off the bat, because I think anybody who works in some type of remote hybrid environment knows we're moving way less, even if it's just getting dressed in the morning, getting to the car, or getting to the, I used to live in New York, in the subway or the bus, parking or walking to your office, walking around your office that's probably bigger than your home workspace, talking to coworkers, going to meetings, going to the bathroom, again, commuting home. Even if you spend the majority of time in your car, you're still walking to your car, walking from your car. Just that alone. I have a Fitbit. I track steps. I work with people outside of this podcast on nutrition and weight loss. And so movement is something we talk about all the time. But it's incredible how much movement is removed from your day when you work 6 feet from your bed, like I do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're spot on there. And I feel like, you know, you're coming in from the US. I'm coming in here from Canada. We're in very similar places. And I think other countries are similar too. And it gets really tough too when you're talking about different seasons, like winter. You know, you have to be really, really intentional about the gear that you wear, what you have to wear to go outside, to go for that 5-10 minute walk. And there's definitely a lot there in terms of the amount of physical activity that remote and hybrid workers are getting. But one of the things that I recommend, and I talk about in the book too, or a few of the things that I recommend, is taking a screen break once every hour. So, you know, kind of work 50 minutes, 45 minutes, get up, do that 10, 15 minute, kind of walk around the house, walk around the yard, take the dog out, do those types of things. And so what it does as well is it's, you know, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there. It adds up in terms of your overall very light, excuse me, physical activity time. The other thing that it does too, is it actually can help with your concentration, your focus level. So for example, if you go outside and you focus on things further away in your computer screen, it can actually relax the eyes and it can actually support just healthy eyesight, which is something that's important for people that are, you know, on screens quite often, sometimes multiple screens, in a lot of meetings and a lot of kind of knowledge work and things like that. So that's something I recommend. And then another thing that I try to do as well is on the nutrition front, I really advocate that, you know, to control what you bring into your home, right? Because it's so tempting to go to the fridge or to go to the kitchen and just grab something. And, you know, if the unhealthy option is there, we tend to go to that sugary or salty unhealthy option. But if you don't have those options there, you're more likely to turn to that apple or banana or whatnot. So, you know, trying to just be more mindful about, you know, what's in that environment and how you can allow that environment to help you can, I guess, work with that environment. Is something that I really talk about quite a bit as well. Yeah.
Really good point about taking the kind of, I've heard it referred to before as snacks, kind of movement snack breaks from work. I like to think of it that way because it's not maybe you're setting aside a full 30 to 45 minutes to go for a walk. It could even just be 5 to 10. What do you say to somebody who's listening and they're skeptical and they say, well, I just have back-to-back meetings all day long. I can't do any movement throughout the day. I can't build in those 10-minute walks here and there.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, the first thing I would do is I would question the company culture in terms of them supporting your well-being. And I know that, you know, I'm very fortunate full-time. I work for a not-for-profit. We are not, you know, we're not in the business of making profit. So I understand that the private and profit spaces can be different and a little bit more rigorous with that type of scheduling. But, you know, one of the things that we try to do and that I try to do personally is just block large chunks of time for specific tasks. And then within that, I have a little bit of freedom and flexibility to get up and to go outside, to maybe take that call and make it a standing walking meeting. And so we really try to build that in with our culture, and that's something that I really try to emphasize and do. So if you're able to do that, I would definitely say the the standing or walking meetings, going mobile, I call it, is effective. The other thing too is, and I recently been reading up on this or listening more about this, and you're probably familiar with Adam Grant. I know he's out there on the West Coast as well, and he just had a really great interview with, oh, I'm blanking on his name. It was around like slow, what we call slow productivity. And it was fascinating, just the conversation. It was basically like for every one Zoom meeting that Adam would have, he sets aside 8 hours for deep work. Now that's in the knowledge working space, and we don't all have that luxury, but I try to look at it as like a one-to-one. For 1 hour of meeting time, I try to block 1 hour for the work time. And so that allows me that flexibility to, like I say, get up, move around, take care of responsibilities at home and things like that. So there's not really, I guess, a kind of a magic bullet, other than, maybe leaning on any existing policies that might exist that you can maybe emphasize that need to be updated and changed to better support your well-being in those spaces, but also just to find ways to build that in with your calendar scheduling or taking those meetings and making them mobile.
Absolutely, yeah. When I've had clients who want to move more, which typically most of them are wanting, and that's going to be very supportive of their nutrition and or weight loss, health, whatever goals. If they approach their team or their boss and say, "Hey, I'm going to need to kind of walk or move at some point in my day," typically people are responsive. And if anything, those people probably know that they need to move more as well, which I think is interesting because they're probably hybrid or remote as well and sitting a good portion of the day. So you could even be kind of an inspiration to your team if you bring this up. Another hang up mentally, I think a lot of people have is, well, if I schedule 60 minutes to work on tasks, I need all of those 60 minutes for those tasks. I can't take 10 or 15 minutes out of that because then I won't finish everything. What would you say to that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, it depends on the type of work, I guess, that you're doing. I typically don't run into that, just because I try to lean on as many productivity tools as I have that I can get all that done. So that's a really good point, Brooke. For those folks that are out there that I guess are looking for support on that. It might be such a thing that even before you start that task, maybe you squeeze something in, or just knowing, I guess, one of the things I share in the book is called the 5-step energy amplifier blueprint. And what that does, and one of the things I talk about leading up to that blueprint, is how do you even structure your pre-morning and your early morning routines so that you can get those moments of physical activity in before your day even starts. I know it's tough when, we're dealing with having kids and responsibilities and early morning practices and the dog needs out and the kids are getting ready for school and there's those realities. But one of the things I advocate for is planning the night before. So not only visualizing what it is that you're going to do in that morning, but also having everything set out, having your gym gear set out, having the smoothie pre-made or whatever that healthy breakfast option looks like for you. And it does take work. This is not easy to do. But I look at it as like, when you're planning for a family vacation, you tend to leave on time when you actually pack the night before. And if we do the same thing for our well-being and we pre-plan what that physical activity can look like for us, then we're more likely going to get that in than not. And so if within your workday, it's very hard to control that time, it's very hard to control the schedule. It may be looking on those fringe hours and what can you move there maybe to squeeze these bouts of physical activity in. And that blueprint does help. It's a series of questions and suggestions. And I encourage readers to just take it and run with it and, figure out what's going to work for you in terms of your actions and other questions that you need to ask yourself as well. But it's just a bit of a starting point.
I can't remember what the principle is. I don't know if you would call it that, but I heard somewhere, again, somebody can, I mean, I could look this up. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes, but it's like if you have 2 days, something will take you 2 days. If you have 2 hours, it'll take you 2 hours. If you have 20 minutes, it'll take you 20 minutes. And I think about this a lot for myself when I have a walk. So I am very open about this on my podcast and with my clients. Movement is a challenge for me. I am somebody who could be very happy sitting on the couch, reading a book, watching a TV show. That's my natural state. I'm not this person who like has to get out in the out the great outdoors and get the fresh air. And so I have to kind of push myself and put systems in place so that I do get outside every day and I do get enough movement. And one of the things that works for me is scheduling walks into my calendar. I prefer to go on kind of like a bigger chunk walk, usually about 40, 45, 50 minutes once a day. And so what I'll do is I have a recurring calendar event Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. for this walk. And then when I look at my week on Sunday night or Monday morning, I move the walks to where they'll fit in my schedule for that week. So I'll move them between calls or at the end of the day. And then it helps to kind of prime me because I see that coming up. I love that you brought up visualization. I see, okay, I'm going to wrap up this call. I'm going to email the client notes and then I'm going to go for my walk. So I have space to kind of mentally prepare for it. Or if I see it coming up after a chunk in my day when I'm going to be doing some type of work on my computer that's not client-based or face-to-face, on Zoom or something. I remind myself that I have this stopping point. So I need to get it done in 60 minutes because that walk's coming up. Not like, oh, if I don't finish it, then I can just not go on the walk. And, I can take 2 hours to do it. And it is pretty incredible how much quicker I get things done when I have some type of frame of time around the task versus just thinking, I have all day to do this.
Yeah, you're spot on. So I was just taking some notes as you were talking because it really sparked a few things for me. First, Matthew McConaughey has said this. This is not me. This is Matthew McConaughey. I love his book, Green
Great.
Lights.
Yeah.
Great, great book. He talks about structure creating freedom. And I think he describes it as like when we stick to like the rigor of structure, we can dance in the rain of freedom. And I absolutely love that. And that's exactly what you're saying there, right? Is that when you build these boundaries, when you have the structure in place, it creates space for freedom to do the things that you want to do the things that can allow you to, work and be proactive with your health and well-being. And that could be your walks, a workout, family time, whatever that is. The other thing that came to mind as you were saying that too is values. And this is something that I talk a lot about in my other book, but it comes up here, right? Where, if we value it, we'll do it. So sometimes we have to go back and take a values audit and really get clear on, okay, well, if we value our health and well-being, we'll put that in the calendar, just like you're talking about. That's a perfect example. You value it, you value your health and well-being. It's not always easy, but you have to be intentional about that and to live that out. So that's just something that's super interesting. And then the final thing that is coming to mind as you said that, Brooke, is just rethinking productivity. And I really love that conversation with Adam Grant around slow productivity because some of the best ideas I've had, and I think it depends on the industry that you're in, the work that you're doing, but if you're in more of a creative space, creative industry, sometimes the best ideas come in the shower. The best ideas come when you're on a walk or when you're at the airport or when you just put yourself in a different environment. And so, just because we're not necessarily seated and we're, typing on the computer doesn't mean we're not necessarily working or we're not necessarily contributing to the creativity economy. And I think it's important to rethink that. So especially if you work in those types of roles, keep a journal with you at all times or keep, something that can capture those notes, but don't be afraid to expand outside that box a little bit and put yourself in different environments be a little bit more physically active, and it may actually spawn some of the best ideas out there.
I've had this similar conversation with clients before, also, and kind of what you're touching on in terms of intention. If you're not intentional and kind of blocking off time, then you're not signaling to your company, you know, I value this hour to work on whatever, and I need this space uninterrupted. Or you're also not signaling to them that, you know, your health is valued. I mean, nobody's going to look out for your health and well-being except for you. So, like, if you're expecting, you know, you work at Google, if you're expecting Google to look out for you and to carve space out for you, that's probably not going to happen. And so you have to be the one to do it and maybe have the tough conversations with colleagues or your boss to carve this space out. And I have so many clients who will say something to me like, you know, I haven't prioritized myself and I've prioritized my career, my kids, my partner, and my health just has gotten lost in the shuffle. And now I'm at this point where my cholesterol is high, you know, my doctor's concerned, things aren't looking good for if I continue on this path for the next 50 years. And so it's kind of this rock bottom moment. And so to prevent yourself from getting there, just being, you use the word intention, being more intentional about how you communicate with your colleagues, how you carve out your time, how efficient you are at your tasks. I just think it's hugely important because literally no one else is going to do that for you.
Yeah, you're spot on. And the other thing too on that as well, Brooke, is creating the space to stick to that. So, you know, it's, you know, you can get started and get that initial kind of momentum going, but then sustaining that. So one of the things that I'm a huge advocate for is not putting my email on my phone. So like if I'm out at dinner, out with family, or on the weekends, out on the beach going for a walk, I'm not getting the notifications on a work email. Even though maybe your company culture is you don't have to answer that until Monday morning, you start thinking about it, right? And so you also need to build in those psychological boundaries as well, just to kind of protect your mental well-being. And so I think that, you know, when you're looking at it over the long haul, it's important to be intentional about that, not only in the physical domain, but in all of those other dimensions of well-being, right? Like, how are you protecting your mental health? How are you protecting your social well-being? You know, are you getting involved, or do you have space to get involved with local walking groups, to running groups, or just to go grab a coffee with somebody who's a friend in the community? So, yeah, there's a whole, you know, I would love to like zoom into a community somewhere in the United States or Canada that's doing this really, really well. Like, let's elevate this and let's just show like here's a community of remote workers, or hybrid and remote workers that are just completely thriving, and this is what it looks like. Because I have a version of that, and you have a version of it, but it'd be neat to see like a whole community, and maybe it exists somewhere, and we just need to find it. But I think that'd be pretty cool to show.
Yeah, absolutely. I also love that you brought up the idea of designing an environment that supports your goals. And so, in terms of movement, we've been talking about that. That could be designing a calendar that gives you breaks. But then you mentioned the kitchen, the pantry. James Clear, I'm sure you're familiar with his work. He talks a lot about designing an environment that's disciplined so that you can be less disciplined because your environment's doing a lot of the work for you. And he brings in the idea of kind of self-control and willpower. And if you just don't bring this stuff in to begin with, you don't have to sit around all day and think, I'm not going to eat X. I shouldn't eat X. I don't want to eat X. It's just not there. If you want to eat a chocolate chip cookie, you could walk 4 blocks, or you could drive to a local coffee shop, you could get one, but having them out on your counter in a cookie jar all day long and you pass by it 20 times because you're working from home, that's going to be tough. And that's going to require a lot of discipline and brain power and energy, you know, that you're not thinking about other things. You're so fixated on the food that you're trying to eat or not to eat. So I love that you brought up the nutrition aspect, kind of keep these things out, recognize you're working from home, you're 10 steps from your kitchen at all times. So that's a unique challenge now that people didn't have 50 years ago. What are some other challenges aside from working right basically in your kitchen, not moving as much? What are some other challenges that remote or hybrid workers experience versus people who are working in an office?
Yeah, great question. So number one is loneliness. This was all over the media when COVID was kind of going further along, where remote work was keeping the economy propped up. We knew that, but then loneliness became an epidemic. And so I think at one point at the height of the pandemic, it was something like almost 40% of folks in one research study I looked at have reported quite highly, like elevated levels of loneliness compared to pre-pandemic. And so we're social beings by nature. And so even though you're in these remote and hybrid working environments, it's a matter of acknowledging and being self-aware that we need to have social things in our lives. We need to fill the social bucket, the social dimension of well-being, and then figuring out what that looks like for you. So for example, my wife and I recently moved to a new community. I'm working fully remote. So I immediately recognize I need to plug in. I need to figure out based on my schedule, how can I be social? And so I love running and I've joined a local running group. I think there's like 10 of us. I don't get to every run, but I get to as many runs as I can and we talk. And many of the other people in the running group are also working remote. So it's kind of funny that you all end up connecting over some physical activity. The other thing is, just sometimes putting yourself in a different environment. So going to a local coffee shop and just being around people, even if you're an introvert, that can be really helpful just for your kind of psychological, mental well-being as well. Just to be in the community, in that way. So that's another thing, is definitely just acknowledging that that we need to be cautious that we're not, not suffering from loneliness, that we can maybe shift that a little bit if we're struggling. So that's definitely one. The other one you've kind of talked about, I think we've been talking about, Brooke, is just the importance of boundaries. And so one of the things that I talk about is a very, very simple cue. And this goes back to James Clear's work on the habit cycle. But one of the cue or the cue that I have to begin and end my day is the clicking of a lamp on my desk. So that has become my psychological cue that when I click that lamp on, I'm work mode. And at the end of the day, when I click that lamp off, I'm done. And now I'm a husband, I'm whatever it needs to be done around the house, and whatever I have going on in my life. And so figuring out what is that cue for you? Is it closing the laptop? Is it I don't know, popping a soda water at the end of the day? Is it something else? I don't know, but figuring out what is that psychological trigger. It can help you just reiterate the boundaries that you have set, and then just keeping that in your environment. That's really, really important. And then the final thing too that comes up quite a bit, and I know we're not all fortunate enough to have that separation, but if you can have some sort of dedicated space in your home or in that remote environment that is work only. That can be really, really helpful as well. So, we're lucky to have a home office. So when I close the door, I don't really even think about the work, right? But I know that that's not the reality for everyone. So in your own work spaces, if they're small, trying to do the best you can, just to create a small space just for that work. And even if it's just a corner, a nook in the apartment or the condo is important too. So those are just some things that I find have been really helpful.
I love that idea of the cue. I didn't realize I do that. I guess I kind of realized. I've never called it that, so I like that you gave a term to it because I've been trying to describe it to clients where at the end of the day, I close my laptop. I work in our bedroom, which is probably not ideal, but it is what it is. But I close my laptop and then I go into the common kitchen living room and I always turn off kind of the bright fluorescent lighting. And I turn on this really nice lamp and I light a candle. And then sometimes I'll put music on and it's like I'm settling into a different space. So it feels very different from the bright light of my office slash bedroom when I was in work mode. And that I only started doing that a few months ago, but that has been huge for me. Even so, I'm curious on your thoughts about this. Even if I still have some work to do, it doesn't feel as onerous, maybe is the
Yeah.
word. If I'm in that kind of dimly lit space, I'm on the couch now, I have a blanket, I have the candle. And so it's kind of a transition to, maybe tonight I have to do another hour or two of work, but I'm not in my traditional work environment. What do you advise in terms of that? I mean, the reality is a lot of us might still have more work to do after we eat dinner, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And there's a really good book called The Little Book of Hygge. I don't know if you've
Oh,
heard about
I have
this.
heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah, total recommend. And for any listeners, definitely check that out. It comes from, it's a Danish term. But essentially, the book is all about like Hygge in kind of Canada, US terms is cozy, right? So, how do you create these cozy environments? And it comes out of the kind of the Nordic countries. Like Germany has a different version of it, Norway has a different version of it. They kind of all talk about the same thing. And those are countries that are notoriously cold in the winter, dark in the winter. And they've been very intentional about creating these really cozy spaces so that you can be yourself, that you can thrive in your own way, whether it's doing your work or pursuing a hobby or just being with family. So kind of what you're talking about there, Brooke, is you've created this Hygge environment that it puts you in this kind of a relaxed state where you can maybe do some of that lighter work. Maybe the more creative work, the less kind of knowledge or strenuous work. So I'm a huge advocate for that. I think that that's awesome if you want to do that. And I think it also shows that you've aligned your passion with your profession. I think that that's something too that if you're passionate about your work, that's also healthy. That's good, right? Passion is good. Obsession is a whole other conversation. I'm not qualified to go there. But passion is important, and if you're passionate about it, it fills you, it's part of your identity and who you are, then being as comfortable as possible is critical. So definitely check out that book. They're really big on like unscented candles, and like lots of unscented candles. And so we've started doing that too, like in our home, especially in the winter. Maybe it's like a Thursday night, and even I might have another hour of work to do, or something I'm contributing on one of my books. I'll put the candle on, just like you're saying, put the fireplace on and go for it. So yeah, I love it, but definitely check that book out.
I love that. Yeah, I'll link that in the show notes. A unique challenge for me, and I know my husband, he's back full time in the office, but I know this was a challenge for him. So I'm assuming if the two of us struggle with it, there are other people as well. What about distractions when you're working from home in terms of you see something like, oh, I could do the dishes, or there's that load of laundry, or you go to the bathroom and it's like, it's kind of dirty in here. I could clean this real quick. How do you avoid your home improvement distractions throughout the day?
Yeah, this is a great question, Brooke, and it comes up quite a bit. So in chapter 7 of the book, I talk about this, and I talk about I call it swapping distractions, because it's interesting. There's a lot of distractions in the office too, right? So those distractions just look and feel and sound different at home, but they're there. And so acknowledging that, like having that acknowledgement that these are going to come up, absolutely. Is critical, but one of the things I encourage readers to do is, and this goes back to really anything when we're talking to nutrition or physical activity, it's very hard to just eliminate something versus mitigating something, right? So I encourage readers to I build in this little chart where you can highlight what is the home office distraction and what are my mitigation strategies. So for example, as we're recording this podcast, there was a delivery at the door. So if I wasn't on this podcast, I probably would have got up and went to the door and picked that up, right? So acknowledging that those things are going to be there, but then kind of doing a bit of an audit in terms of, okay, well, what things can I maybe set up in my systems so that I'm reducing those distractions? So for example, with food delivery, you could say, I want it delivered after 6 p.m. or before 8 a.m. Especially if you're in an urban center, you might have those options. Another thing is, making sure that your fire alarms and all of those pieces are working properly, so they don't just randomly go off, especially in a Zoom meeting. Another thing too is, if you have pets, Making sure that you get them as comfortable as possible before you're starting and ending meetings. I find that that makes a huge difference as well, just so that you're not getting up and kind of being distracted with what's going on there. So distractions are unique to everyone. And so it's kind of hard to have a universal recommendation, but I guess the first tip is just airing it out. What is it? And then what are some possible mitigation strategies based on your environment that could be effective to maybe reduce those as you go?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think I like that you say there's distractions at the office too, because now that I've been working from home for so long, it feels like there's so many distractions, and I have kind of mitigated them, I think, for myself. And sometimes I even use them as my little movement break of I have to water the plants, so I'm walking all around my apartment and taking 20 minutes and I'm watering plants. And so sometimes I think it can actually help that I'm doing stuff between calls and I'm not just sitting at my computer. But then when I think about it, when I used to be a teacher, I mean, colleagues would pop in all the time and be chit-chatting. And then in the faculty room, it was hard to get anything done. So now I feel less bad, I guess, because I realize I used to be distracted at work as well.
Yeah, in the early days of the pandemic, it was wild. Like the articles that were coming out about, oh, remote workers are there's too much distractions and too much going on. And I remember when I was writing the book thinking, well, I'm more productive at home than I was in office. I worked in an open office and it was great, don't get me wrong. I did love it, but I'm way more productive at home. And if you work in an open office environment, or like you're saying, in different things like schools is a good example, those distractions are there, right? And we're all human, they come up. And so it's almost like 80% of your time, how are you structuring it? But acknowledging that 10 to 20% of the time, whether you're in office or at home, those distractions are going to be there. They just look different, right?
Makes sense. Yeah. One of the final questions I ask each of my guests is, in your opinion, what does it mean to make the health investment?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think for me, it means that you're doing the things now that are positively impacting your health and your well-being, so that your future self will thank you for it. In the form of hopefully longevity, enhanced mobility as we age, and just overall good health and well-being. Now, things do come up in life, but that's the goal, right? And I recently read this. It was like the goal of life is to reach death as late as possible and as functional as possible. And so when you start thinking about that and you kind of work backwards from that, you're like, okay, what do I need to do now so that I can age well, that I can feel well, that I can, have a longer life and things like that. So I don't know if that overwhelms listeners or that gives a little perspective, but that's just my thought.
It didn't overwhelm me. I like it. So I appreciate it. That's all that really matters. If we're being honest, my podcast. So as long as I'm happy, then we're all good. Where can listeners follow and find you?
Yeah, so definitely my website. You can go to Fahey Consulting, spelled Fahey consulting.org. And LinkedIn. I still love LinkedIn. People can find me there, just Ryan Fahey. Take a look there. I'd love to chat with any listeners. Definitely look me up and stay in touch.
Do you do presentations and things for companies that have mostly remote or hybrid workers?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm actually a registered speaker through the Canadian Speakers Bureau. And so one of the offerings that I offer is training and keynote speaking for hybrid and remote teams, conferences for remote and hybrid teams, things like that, both online and in person. And it can be kind of at that executive level or with entire teams as well. Yeah.
That's very cool. And I think if somebody's hearing this, it might feel overwhelming because you can only do so much if there's these other bigger structural problems in place. But then, I think companies are always looking to hire speakers and do conferences and things. So recommending
Yeah.
to an executive, hey, if we bring this guy in, and then everybody hears what you're saying. So it's not just you as a solo person saying, I need a little bit of space throughout the day to go for a walk. The executives would hear it as well. So that's very cool and awesome that people can use you as that resource.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because I'm still hearing stories about this. Like recently I sat with an executive 2 weeks ago, and they're making a decision whether they're going to close their office and go fully remote. And they were like, ah, but we're not sure on the productivity side. And I was like, whoa, hold up. Like we're well beyond this at this point. And so, yeah, it's interesting to see that some leaders are still hesitant on certain decisions around remote work when there's obviously nuances depending on the company and the team that you have, but at the end of the day, it can be a great opportunity for the entire organization or company. So it's just a matter of really being intentional about it and looking at it in different ways.
Yeah, it's almost like there's still these little sound bites that exist that aren't necessarily based on research, but they've just heard somewhere, like, oh, my team won't be as productive if they work remote. But then you jump in and you're like, wait a second. That's not actually true. So good for
Yeah,
people to hear.
absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Ryan. This was such a fantastic conversation. Again, unique topic, never covered this here. I'm grateful for your time. I know listeners are as well, and we all look forward to connecting with you off air.
Yes, thanks, Brooke, and thanks everyone for tuning in today.
Well, that's all for today. Thanks again for joining me here on the Health Investment Podcast. I'm so grateful for each and every one of my listeners. On your way out, remember to hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode. See you next week. All content in this podcast was created for general informational purposes only by a non-physician. None of the content should serve as a substitute for professional medical advice, treatment, or diagnosis. Always consult a qualified health provider with any questions regarding a medical condition and before making changes to your diet, lifestyle, and/or exercise programs. Do not disregard any professional medical advice you have received or postpone seeking such advice because of something you heard on this podcast.